ओमज्ञानतिबिरन्दस्य ज्ञानाञ्जलाशलाखाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः। जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवरगौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। 13th chapter 15th verse. Sarvendriya gunapasham, sarvendriya vivarjitam, asaktam sarva vriyaschaiva, nirgunam guna bhoktracha. The super soul is the original source of senses, yet he is without senses. He is unattached, although he is maintainer of all living beings. He transcends the modes of nature, and at the same time he is the master of the all the modes of material nature. So now something, you know, here there is something interesting Prabhupada has translated in this verse. Let me also refer to verse number 14. Can someone identify, you know, what Prabhupada is actually specifically translating? Anyone can recognize from this translation? In the 14th translation also, there is something common. Okay. Okay, let's finish the purport of 15, then we'll discuss. The Supreme Lord, although the source of all the senses of living entity, does not have material senses like they have. Actually, the individual souls have spiritual senses, but in conditioned life, they are covered with the material elements, and therefore the sense activities are exhibited through matter. The Supreme Lord's senses are not so covered. His senses are transcendent and therefore called nirguna. Guna means the material modes, but his senses are without material covering. It should be understood that his senses are not exactly like ours. Although he is the source of all our sensory activities, he has his transcendental senses, which are uncontaminated. This is very nice to explain in the Svetavastra Upanishad, 19, in the verse, Pani Pado Javano Grahita. The Supreme Person of Godhead has no hands, which are materially contaminated, but he has his hands and accepts whatever sacrifice is offered to him. That is the distinction between the conditioned soul and the super soul. He has no material eyes, but he has eyes. Otherwise, how could he see? He sees everything, past, present, and future. He lives within the heart of the living being, and he knows what we have done in the past, what we are doing now, what is awaiting us in the future. He is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. He knows everything, but no one knows him. It is said the Supreme Lord has no legs like us, but he can travel throughout space because he has spiritual legs. In other words, the Lord is not impersonal. He has his eyes, legs, hands, and everything else. And because we are part and parcel of Supreme Lord, we also have these things. But his hands, legs, eyes, and senses are not contaminated by material nature. Bhagavad Gita also confirms that when the Lord appears, he appears as he is by his internal potency. He is not contaminated by material energy because he is the Lord of material energy. In the Vedic literature, we find that his whole embodiment is spiritual. He has his eternal form called Satchidananda Vigraha. He is filled of all opulence. He is the proprietor of all wealth and the knower of all energy. He is the most intelligent and is full of knowledge. These are some of the symptoms of the Supreme Person of Godhead. He is the maintainer of all living entities and the witness of all activity. As far as we can understand from Vedic literature, the Supreme Lord is always transcendental. Although we do not see his head, face, hands, legs, he has them. And when we are elevated to transcendental situation, we can see the Lord's form. With the materially contaminated senses, we cannot see his form. Therefore, the impersonalists who are still materially affected cannot understand the personality of Godhead. Okay, so one common observation in the translation of 14 and 15 verse. Anyone can make out? Anubhav, are you all there?
Yes, Rohit.
Yeah, so what is the observation in the translations?
It's talking about the Gnaya, that is about the super soul, the object to be known.
It is talking about the super soul. Yeah. So is that super soul word given anywhere in the original verse?
No. This is Prabhupada has given the clear knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. So
people might misunderstand it as soul also.
Yeah, that's a good point. And another thing is, one second. Okay. So it seems that, you know, probably Baldev Bhushan, he translated in terms of super soul, or maybe this is Prabhupada's translation, because Prabhupada has used Baldev Bhushan's commentary. He has referred to that mostly for the entire Bhagavad Gita. But as we had discussed in the last class, that, you know, Jiva Goswami mentions about this as, you know, Sarvato, you know, the previous verse, the 14th verse, it mentions that, 14th verse, Sarvato Pani Padam Tat Sarvato Shiram Kam Sarvato Shuti Malloke Sarvam Avritya Tishtati. So everywhere are his hands and legs, but he's actually referring this to as Krishna is a, you know, Supreme Personality of Godhead and obviously the various incarnations. So super soul, as you know, like as you mentioned that, okay, in order to distinguish from the soul and the super soul, maybe Prabhupada is using that, or maybe this is Baldev Bhushan's commentary. And then one more reason might be there that, you know, Prabhupada probably wants to describe the super soul in detail. You know, what is exactly the super soul? Because, you know, many places he is mentioning that the soul and super soul, in fact, some of the purports also previously, you know, we have read, Prabhupada is mentioning that the super soul is the difference between the soul and the super soul. And then he says that we know our own body and we know about ourselves, but the super soul knows about each and every one of us. So actually, this is the main responsibility and task of the super soul, basically. Okay, Krishna is not involved in this. So something very interesting, that this super soul is used in the context of material world, where this super soul is reciprocating with each and every living entity. Okay, in terms of, because he is present in the heart of each and every living entity. So he is recording the activities of each and every living entity, past, present, future. But what is the difference between Krishna's presence and the super soul's presence? What is the difference?
Super soul is just Upadrashta and Anumanta.
Sorry?
He is only Upadrashta and Anumanta. I mean, whatever we desire, he
super
will
sanction.
Upadrashta and Anumanta. Uh-huh. I mean, sanctioner and witness. And maybe
okay.
Krishna.
So what is the difference? What is the main difference?
If one accepts Krishna in the path, then maybe he'll direct us guidely, I mean, directly he'll guide us.
Directly what?
He will guide us in the devotional path.
Okay, so we are actually connected, but like exactly, you know. So what is the difference between Krishna? So okay, just imagine if this verse mentioned that Krishna is the original source of all senses, yet he is without senses, he is not unattached, he is a maintainer of all, he transcends the modes of nature. Instead of the super soul, if Prabhupada used the word Krishna, then what would make the difference? Or
So
will there be
Krishna,
a
that means
difference? You know, if Prabhupada is.
Krishna is connected to material nature. I mean, super soul is connected to material nature, but Krishna is not.
So, exactly. So, see, this role of expansion in the material universe, the material world, the material energy, all-pervading aspect of the Lord is more taken care of by the super soul aspect. Obviously, you know, ultimately they are all non-different. And the super soul's source is Krishna only, finally. So, obviously, all these things, whatever is mentioned, you know, Krishna also. It is applicable to Krishna also, no doubt about it. But Krishna has a more personal presence and specifically for the devotees. Okay, so he will see Krishna is basically super soul is always there in the material realm. He is a controller of the material energy. So we define him as Paramatma. He's beyond Brahman, okay, the Paramatma feature of the Lord. But he does not exist in the spiritual world, that you also know. So this role of super soul is limited to the material universe. But when we talk about Krishna, then obviously we talk about his pastimes also. And Krishna's pastimes means he's specifically reciprocating with the devotees. That is the main purpose. So Krishna's presence is actually more perceived in terms of devotional service to the Lord. Okay, here everything is in terms of very impersonal form. The super soul is also reciprocating. But at least they don't, you know, think like that because they don't believe in God. So the Lord will reciprocate in an appropriate way with the atheist. So he is reciprocating with everyone in the material world. But like those who do not believe, and you know, so for every one of them, you know, super soul is actually having some task. But Krishna is not like that. So he appears only for his devotees. So Krishna's main role is it's not just yada yada dharmasya, paritrana sadhunam. So first and foremost, paritrana sadhunam, which means that he is appearing for his devotees because dharmasya means he can, you know, he's a super soul, so he can just move out of the body and people will die. So there is no life in the body, people will. Expansion. And as we know also from Raj Leela, that even when demons were coming in Raj, Krishna was not, you know, involved with fighting with them. It was actually the expansion, Vasudeva expansion, which was actually dealing with the demons. So Krishna is just, you know, enjoying with his devotee friends in spiritual world or in material world, in Raj Bhumi, basically. Okay. So this is a major difference that Krishna appears everywhere. Krishna can also appear everywhere, provided we purify ourselves. Because Krishna is, he cannot appear in the to the materially contaminated senses. He only appears when the senses are purified. So let's say, for example, if the entire world, the entire living entities in the world, they become devotees of Krishna, then you can say that okay, the Krishna, you know, instead of super soul, we can mention about Krishna here. Because then Krishna will obviously reciprocate with each and every jiva in a very personal way, in a very, in a devotional way, you know. But here the reciprocation is more of impersonal reciprocation. So that's why Prabhupada is also mentioning here that, see, we do not see his head, face, hands, legs. due to material conditions, we cannot see. But therefore, impersonalists who are cannot understand personality, I'm called it. So Krishna can be seen and his presence can be perceived when our eyes are anointed with prema. So we know that from Brahma Samhita. And that's how the Lord is going to appear to us. Now, even if he appears before us in his original form as Shyam Sundar, but if there is no transformation, if we won't surrender to him, then what is the use of such kind of vision of the Lord? Right? So the main thing is that, you know, we develop transcendental eyes to see him. Or basically, you know, he can appear in the heart of a devotee who has reached the state of bhava and prema. When the devotee is purified, then Krishna will appear to them. Right? So this is how we have to understand this. It's applicable to Krishna also, but Krishna has a specific role, you know, and see, that is the reason why we have so many incarnations. Each and every avatar, it has a specific task and role to perform. So similarly, the question of, you know, about why there are so many demigods or why there is need of so many gods in Hinduism, this also can be answered in similar way. That, you know, the Supreme Lord is actually the supreme enjoyer. He has nothing to do with anything else. He will just enjoy, and that is why he has delegated different people for different services and responsibilities. So that's why we have, you know, these different categories of demigods and incarnation also. Okay, so Krishna is indirectly in touch with the material energy, and he is at the same time is also doing his pastimes in Goloka. So he's not directly in contact with material energy. Okay, that is done by Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, Shiradakshayi Vishnu. And then obviously we have the Shiva incarnation also, the Shambhu. So any comment or question on this? So we can understand that how Prabhupada is very carefully translating, you know, and how he is actually using specific terms. See, these things are very deep actually, you know, unless we understand through the vision of acharyas or the senior Vaishnavas, we cannot understand these things. We'll just go through it. I mean, you know, here Krishna is not even, you know, saying that super soul, or he is not even naming Shirokashaya Vishnu, right? You cannot find that word Shirokashaya Vishnu, nor he is actually mentioning about the you know, because the Vedas describe about the two birds. So one bird is, you know, the Jiva, other is the Supreme Lord, who is actually watching and observing the activities of the other bird, who is the Jiva. So Krishna does not even use that, you know, bird word in these shlokas. But here, that's how, you know, he is just... And if you refer to the verse number 13, can verse refer to the verse number 13. The translation is as follows. I shall now explain the knowable knowing which you will taste the eternal. Brahman, the spirit, beginningless and subordinate to me, lies beyond the cause and effect of this material world. So now, see, here the word Brahma is there. But what is the translation? Prabhupada is not translating as, he's not giving the synonyms Brahma as the Brahman. You know, he's actually translating as spirit. But here in the translation he's writing, knowing which you will taste the eternal. Brahman, the spirit. So he's like, you know, he's mentioning like that. So nowhere in all these three verses you will find actually Krishna is trying to describe the super soul. He is trying to describe the spirit, which is here indicated by the word Brahma. Okay, so any comments? Okay, let's go with next 16. Yeah, okay. Sudama Madari. When are you going to Mayapur and Down?
Night we are traveling, Prabhu.
Okay, okay. When are you coming back?
21st. 21st.
25th.
First.
21st. 10 days. Wow. Long time.
Yeah.
Lifetime. Long time. Okay. Yeah, so verse number 16.
Bahir andascha bhutanam acharam charam eva cha sushmat tat abhineyam durastam chanti kechatat. Translation. The supreme truth exists outside and inside of all living beings, the moving and the non-moving. Because he is subtle, he is beyond the power of material senses to see or to know. Although far, far away, he is also near to all. Support. In Vedic literature, we understand that Narayana, the supreme person, is residing both outside and inside of every living entity. He is present in both the spiritual and material world. Although he is far, far away, still he is near to us. These are the statements of Vedic literature. Asino duram vachati shayano yadi sarvada. Kadopanishad 1.2.21. And because he is always engaged in transcendental bliss, we cannot understand how he is enjoying his full opulence. We cannot see or understand with these material senses. Therefore, in the Vedic language, it is said that to understand him, our material mind and senses cannot act. But one who has purified his mind and senses by practicing Krishna consciousness in devotional service can see him constantly. It is confirmed in Brahma Samhita that the devotee who has developed love for the Supreme God can see him always without cessation. And it is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 11.54 that he can be seen and understood only by devotional service. Bhaktiya tu ananaya sakhi. Hare Krishna.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, next. Aditya Prabhu, are you there?
Yes. 13:17. Avibhaktam cha bhuteshu vibhaktam ivachastitam bhuta vratri cha tadneyam grashishnu prabhavishnu cha. Translation. Although the super soul appears to be divided among all beings, he is never divided. He is situated as one. Although he is the maintainer of every living entity, it is to be understood that he devours and develops all. Purport. The Lord is situated in everyone's heart as a super soul. Does this mean that he has become divided? No. Actually, he is one. The example is given of the sun. The sun at the meridian is situated in its place. But if one goes for 5,000 miles in all directions and asks, where is the sun? Everyone will say that it is shining on his head. In the Vedic literature, this example is given to show that although he is undivided, he is situated as if divided. Also, it is said in Vedic literature that one Vishnu is present everywhere by his omnipotence. Just as the sun appears in many places to many persons, and the Supreme Lord, also the maintainer of every living entity, devours everything at the time of annihilation. This was confirmed in the 11th chapter when the Lord said that he had come to devour all the warriors assembled at Kurukshetra. He also mentioned that in the form of time, he devours also. He is the annihilator, the killer of all. When there is creation, he develops all from their original state. And at the time of annihilation, he devours them. The Vedic hymns confirm the fact that he is the origin of all living entities and the rest of all. After creation, everything rests in his omnipotence.
and after annihilation, everything again returns to rest in Him. These are the confirmations of Vedic hymns. Yatova imami bhutani jayante yena jatani jivanti yat prayanti abhisham vishanti tad brahma tad vigyashasva. This is from Tritriya Upanishad 3.1.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any question? So here a very relevant example of the sun is in the Prabhupada.
Achintya Bheda Vetta, so a little bit of that, because although he is never divided, yet he appears to be divided.
Yeah, he's never divided because Isha Vasya Midan Sarvam Jat Kinchit Jagatyam Jagat Tena Taktena Bhunjita. You know that, which is that verse?
Somewhere from Ishopanishad.
Beginning. Om Purna Idam Purna Midam Purna Purna Sridashyate Purna Sapurna Adaya Purna Meva Vashishyate. So that is a principle, you know, and obviously that is inconceivable because we have never seen this in the material realm, that if you remove something from an object, the object is still the same. we definitely can understand from the sun. You know, the sun is actually the relevant example. And that's how we can actually understand that, you know, even if the Supreme Lord is divided, but still He is one. He is always going to be the same. There is nothing less in that. Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's always complete. Yeah, I mean, you know, like last class also we're discussing about Krishna personally present everywhere for all the devotees who are worshipping Krishna. I think you were not there, no, Aritra, for the last class. Or
no.
Maybe you were hearing in the background. Okay.
In the beginning, I didn't hear through the entire one.
Yeah, so in the last part of the class, we were discussing about how, you know, when you're worshipping the deity as Krishna, one should be the Lord during the appearance of the Lord, Janmashtami, Radhashtami, or Gaur Purnima. So then you are worshipping the deity of the Lord, but who is reciprocating, you know, because is Krishna present in the material world?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the talks about the super soul. So the devotees were given different answers, and I think some of them were thinking that it is a super soul who is actually reciprocating. But obviously we know from Bhagavad Gita that as you approach the Lord, He will reciprocate with you accordingly, as you surrender to the Lord. So it's not possible that any other form of the Lord can reciprocate. It is the specific form of the Lord that you worship that will reciprocate with you. Because all the forms of the Lord are eternal and they are all existing simultaneously. So they are separate, but they are one also at the same time. And so Krishna will be present, Krishna will appear again also. Already, you know, He has disappeared from Kali Yuga. I mean, from the vision of the living entities, you know, He disappeared in Dwapara. And that was the beginning of Kali Yuga. So He disappeared, so then how does He appear again? And does He appear again, or He is, you know, because He is saying that He is Yada Yada Dharmasya. So He has already appeared in Dwapara Yuga. You know, but then who is going to appear now in Kali Yuga? Because Krishna does not appear, actually. That is a fact. He does not, we know that the Lord is Tri Yuga. Right? So He only, Tri Yuga means, what is the meaning of Tri Yuga?
Satya, Treta, Dwapar. Not
Kali Yuga. But what is the meaning of that? So, He does not appear in Kali Yuga. He appears in only three yugas. Now, what is the meaning of He is appearing in the three yugas? What is the meaning of that? Did Krishna appear? Did Krishna, see, who has appeared in Satyuga? We know Narasimha Dev, Vaman Dev, different avatars of the Lord. Now, obviously, we know that there are Yuga avatars. Okay? And then there are different types of avatars of the Lord. So, here, basically, Krishna is referring to Leela avatar. You know, as the supreme person, or as Vishnu Tattva, he is actually coming as Leela avatar. Or basically, you can say that the denizens of the respective yugas, they were able to see the Lord directly with their material eyes. But in Kali Yuga, you cannot see the Lord with your material eyes. So that is the meaning of that he does not appear in Kali Yuga. He appears in Triyug form. Okay, now the question is, what about Kalki? Why Kalki is not included? Kalki is going to come in Kali Yuga. So why, how can he be Triyuga?
Because there is not much leelas he has to offer as Kalki avatar.
Sorry?
Because Lord may not be having much of leelas to offer as in appearance of the Kalki avatar. He is going to come and finish off, lead out all the terribly fallen souls. So,
in that way, Narasimha's appearance, it was very brief appearance. I mean, hardly there was any Leela with Lord Narasimha Dev. And if you see the Leela of Kalki, it is already mentioned in the Shastra that he is going to appear in the house of a Brahman family. Right, so he is going to take birth, and I think so it means that, you know, his activities, birth activities will be probably described later on, and you know, he'll grow up, and then, you know, he will take that main, you know, responsibility of annihilating the entire jivas who are impious. So why it is not counted?
Why? Because there won't be any devotees left to reciprocate at that time. So there won't be any like paritranaya sadhanam, that won't be happening. I don't know, I'm just, it may be long shot.
See,
I am not sure.
In fact, see, one of the cause of the Lord is who is going to appear, and you know, the reason he is also going to send out us is to pacify the devotees. So I don't think that there will be no devotees at the end of Kali Yuga. There will be devotees who will be harassed by demons, and that would be the main reason for his coming. You know, but you know, the main point is that Kalki avatar is actually a Saktavesh avatar, and he is an empowered jiva. He is not the supreme Lord. Okay, so we are talking about Vishnu Tattva coming in these different yugas. Ramchandra appeared, Krishna appeared, Narasimha, Vaman. So these are all like Vishnu Tattvas. Like, you know, Parshuram is not Vishnu Tattva, I believe. He is a Saktavesh avatar. So similarly, Buddha also is, I think, you know, he is probably a Saktavesh avatar. Okay, so, yeah, because, you know, there is no Vishnu Tattva appearing. Now, obviously, we should say that, okay, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then, you know, why Mahaprabhu is not considered. But then the reason is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually appeared in the form of a devotee. He is one of the yuga avatars. And he was a hidden incarnation, you know. So that's why we say that Krishna is appearing in, you know, or the Lord is appearing in three yugas, only the three yugas. So there is no question of Krishna appearing in the Kali Yuga. But then, you know, is this, you know, okay, so we accept it, you know, because this is what the Shastra is saying. So does it mean that, you know, we cannot have interaction with Krishna, or we cannot see Krishna, you know, when our object of worship is Krishna? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw Krishna so many times. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees, they saw Krishna so many times. And then the other sampradaya, like Vallabha sampradaya and Kumar sampradaya, you know, they also had darshan of Krishna. So see, the difference is that Krishna does not appear means, you know, he does not appear in Kali Yuga specifically to the material eyes. But for those who are already perfected beings, Krishna can appear to them also. And, you know, they can have darshan of Krishna. So darshan of Krishna is basically, you know, you have surrendered to the Lord completely. So it is, you know, the presence of the Lord in the heart. There is a transformation, you know, there is a purification of the heart. Complete purification. Because as we know, at the seat of Bhava, the Ladini and Sambhut potencies enter the heart of the devotee. Then only they can actually perceive the Lord, because otherwise it's not possible to perceive the Lord. Anyone who has seen the Lord, or, you know, who can see the Lord in Kali Yuga, they must have the Sambhut and Ladini Shaktis. Now, Ladini is meant for experiencing bliss. And Samvit is actually to perceive the knowledge about Krishna. Because Samvit means knowledge. And Sambhini is existence. So Samvit and Ladini's potencies, they will enter the heart of the devotees in order to have darshan of the Lord. So that happens in the state of Bhava, not before that. So this is how we can actually see the Lord. But, you know, see, it is like, as a sadhaka, now, you know, talking about sadhakas, obviously we don't see the Lord, that is for sure. So even during Janmashtami, when we do abhishek of deities, when we are serving the deities also on a regular basis, you cannot say that it is not Krishna who is not associating with you, or who is some, you know, incarnation or some other form of the Lord who is associating, because then you are actually discarding the intention that as you surrender, I shall reward accordingly. Okay. So, obviously, it is the Lord only who is reciprocating, but he is reciprocating in a indirect way. Like, so he is not present before us, according to our stage of purification, but he is also reciprocating in terms of making arrangements for us. He, you know, he is the planner, he is the supreme planner for devotees. And he will also arrange karma for devotees. Like, you know, he will purify the devotees according to their karmas. So he will be personally involved. You know, he will be personally involved. And he will also personally reciprocate with us. But what type of reciprocation, you know, that is obviously dependent on the purification level of the devotee. So one cannot see the Lord with the material eyes, but at least they will experience reciprocation. Otherwise, if none of us would have experienced any kind of reciprocation, then how can we attest that this Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya is a bona fide Sampradaya, or, you know, ISKCON or any other Vaishnava Sampradaya is a bona fide Sampradaya? Obviously, because the more we render service to the Lord, the more we see his reciprocation. And that's how our conviction is strengthened, right? We build our confidence to that. And so, Rupa Goswami has mentioned 9 stages. Shraddha, Sadhu, Sangha, Bhajana, Kriya, Anartha, Nivritti, Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti. So, there are symptoms of these stages, and we can identify that which stage we are at, and then correspondingly we can know that where we are going, right? So, there we are on the roadmap. So, this is how Krishna's reciprocation will. And obviously, now Krishna is unlimited, and he is independent. So he can appear anywhere, and he can appear at any time. Right? And so that's the reason, you know, last class, the 14th verse we are talking about Krishna's being present everywhere. Not just the super soul, but specifically for devotees, Krishna is also present everywhere. He's just in a aprakat form right now. So by purification, the more we get purified, the more we can quickly see the Lord. Okay. So does this make sense? Okay, next. Ujwala Matri.
Yes. 18th. Jyotishamapi tajyotish tamasa paramuchyate gnanam gneyam gnanagamyam hridi sarvasya vishtitam. He is the source of light in all luminous objects. He is beyond the darkness of matter and is unmanifested. He is knowledge, he is the object of knowledge, and he is the goal of knowledge. He is situated in everyone's heart, purport. The Super Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a source of light in all luminous objects like the sun, moon and stars. In the Vedic literature, we find that in the spiritual kingdom, there is no need of sun or moon because the effulgence of the Supreme Lord is there. In the material world, the Brahma Jyoti, the Lord's spiritual effulgence, is covered by the Mahatattva, the material elements. Therefore, in this material world, we require the assistance of sun, moon, electricity, etc. for light. But in the spiritual world, there is no need of such things. It is clearly stated in the Vedic literature that because of his luminous effulgence, everything is illuminated. It is clear, therefore, that his situation is not in the material world. He is situated in the spiritual world, which is far, far away in the spiritual sky. That is also confirmed in the Vedic literature. Adityavarnam Tamasa Parastat, Sveta Satara Upanishad 3.8. He is just like the sun, eternally luminous, but he is far, far beyond the darkness of this material world. His knowledge is transcendental. The Vedic literature confirms that Brahman is concentrated transcendental knowledge. To one who is anxious to be transferred to the spiritual world, knowledge is given by the Supreme Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart. One Vedic mantra, Sveta Sutra Upanishad 6.18 says, Tamha Devam Atma Buddhi Prakasham Mumukshur Vai Saranam Aham Prapadye. One must surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead if he at all wants liberation. As far as the goal of ultimate knowledge is concerned, it is also confirmed in Vedic literature, Tameva Viditvati Mrityum Eti. Only by knowing him can one surpass the boundary of birth and death, Sveta Sutra Upanishad 3.8. He is situated in everyone's heart as a supreme controller. The supreme has legs and hands distributed everywhere, and this cannot be said of the individual soul. Therefore, that there are two knowers of the field of activity, the individual soul and the super soul, must be admitted. One's hands and legs are distributed locally, but Krishna's hands and legs are distributed everywhere. This is confirmed in the Sveta Sutra Upanishad 3.17. Sarvasya Prabhum Ishanam Sarvasya Sharanam Brahat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Super Soul, is the Prabhu or Master of all living entities. Therefore, he is the ultimate shelter of all living entities. So there is no denying the fact that the supreme super soul and the individual soul are always different. Hare Krishna.
Okay, Hare Krishna. Okay, Achha, Rajiv, are you there?
Yes, I'm there.
Did you get a chance to speak to Narayan Matri?
Not in Pulidhi, tomorrow morning possibly actually.
Acha, okay. Okay, so you let me know soon, huh? Because the time is very less.
Thank you. Before noon, I will let you know. Soon.
Okay, tomorrow, yeah, tomorrow. So the question is that Prabhupada writes here, material, in the spiritual world, there is no sun, moon, electricity. But, you know, so is this really true? In the spiritual world, do we have sun, moon?
In the world itself, effulgence, so there is no need as such, or depending on sun for
okay.
The light.
Yeah, we understand that. Okay. The spiritual world does not need. There is no need of sun and moon, you know, because it is self-effulgent. But really speaking, is sun and moon not there?
If anything that manifests there, like it is said in Golodhan, for the Leela, for the purpose of Leela. So for the purpose of Leela, it belongs you have sun and moon, and so that they can, maybe Lord can recite a poetry about the moon if he wants to, then maybe he can have the moon there, but not as a necessity, I guess.
Yeah, right. So sun and moon are also there, and they are also doing service. So, but their services, see, how does Rasliya take this? You know, we know that Sharad Purnima, you know, means full moon has to be there. So Krishna is obviously using sun and moon. Now, how, see, there is day and night also in the spiritual world. It's not that, did you, you know, without sun, how do you think, you know, there will be day and night without sun and moon? So spiritual world also, sun is there, moon is there. But their role is different. In the material world, they are actually, their main responsibility is to, obviously apart from being demigods, but you know, they are actually, sun is actually measuring the deterioration of time, you know, because in the material world, time is a factor. In the spiritual world, there is no time. But you know, if you see, Krishna's activities are actually all based on timings. His Nitya Leela in the spiritual world, in a Rashtakalya Leela, eightfold pastimes of Krishna, they are all based on time. So at a particular time, Krishna is doing this. At a particular set of time, he is doing other things. And then he is doing other things. So like this, there are eight time zones in Krishna Leela, in the spiritual world. So he is performing those Leelas according to how the time will change. So time is also there in the spiritual world. And moon and sun are also there because, you know, day and night is also there in the spiritual world. So all these, you know, sun, moon and everything is there. Obviously, we don't talk about electricity because electricity is a material concept. You know, it's discovered in the material world. It's not natural, right? So electricity means, you know, for Krishna, electricity means he can, you know, he can perform any kind of miracle. So there is no need for electricity in the spiritual world. So there are no power bank chargers or cell phone chargers because we don't have cell phone there in the spiritual world, right? So electricity is not required, not for laptops also. There is no laptop in the spiritual world, no smartphone. In fact, the phone, you know, your communication that happens there is much more than a smartphone. Okay, it's much smarter than a smartphone, I would say like that. There is no need for any kind of phones or any electronic items to communicate. No WhatsApp. Everyone is like a WhatsApp, you know. They don't have to install applications. So, all these leelas are taking place, they are all eternal, and it keeps repeating every day. So it means that sun, moon is there, day and night is also there, but the only difference is the concept of time is actually to measure the sequences of Krishna's events. That is the main role of time in the spiritual world. And in the material world, the same time is measuring deterioration because we are going to die. So that is the only difference. Okay? Any question on this? Okay, next verse. Yeah, Raji Prabhu and Angel Mataji.
It's a 19th verse, right?
Yeah.
Iti Kshetram Takhar Dhananam Neyam Sestam Samasita Madhaska Itadhyaya Vidya Madhya Vayuka Padhyate. Thank you, Shri. That the theme of activities, the body, knowledge, and the knowledge and the knowable have been summarily described by me. Only my devotees can understand this thoroughly and thus attain to my nature. Purpose. The Lord has described in summary the body, knowledge, and the knowable. this knowledge is of three things, the knower, the noble, and the process of knowing. Combined, these are called the jnana, or the science of knowledge. Perfect knowledge can be understood by the unalloyed devotees of the Lord directly. Others are unable to understand. The monists say that at the ultimate stage, these three items become one. The devotees do not accept this. Knowledge and development of knowledge mean understanding oneself in Krishna consciousness. We are being led by material consciousness, but as soon as we transfer all consciousness to Krishna's activities and realize that Krishna is everything, then we attain real knowledge. In other words, knowledge is nothing but the preliminary stage of understanding devotional service perfectly. In the 15th chapter, this will be very clearly explained. Now, to summarize, one may understand that verses 6 and 7, beginning from Mahabhutani and continuing through Ketna Dhiti, analyze the material elements and certain manifestations of the symptoms of life. These combine to form the body or the field of activities, and verses 8 through 12 from Amanitram to Tattva Jnanartha Darshanam describe the process of knowledge for understanding both types of knower of the field of activities, namely the soul and the supersoul. Then verses 13 through 18, beginning from Anadi Mataram and continuing through Vidhi Sarvasya Nishtam, describe the soul and the Supreme Lord or the supersoul. The three items have been described: the field of activity, that is the body, the process of understanding, and both the soul and the supersoul. It is especially described here that only the unalloyed devotees of the Lord can understand these three items clearly. So for these devotees, Bhagavad Gita is fully useful. It is they who can attain the supreme goal, the nature of the Lord, Supreme Lord Krishna. In other words, only devotees and not others can understand Bhagavad Gita. Derive the desire, the desired result.
Yeah, so after describing everything, Krishna is saying that okay, only my devotees can understand thoroughly. So here, you know, this Mad Bhakta word is there, my devotee. And so there is no doubt that, you know, Krishna is talking about his devotee. He's not referring to any kind of impersonal aspect.
This is in Prabhuji, the Jnani, they are they also continuous bhaktas, or they are only going by the root of knowledge and they will finally not understand?
Yeah, so I was going to ask that, you know, what is the meaning of devotee here? Who is referred to as devotee? So who can, who would like to guess?
Devotees mean bhaktas, so they would be the ones who are surrendered to Lord and following the path of love, devotional service.
Yeah, so that is true. Devotees are the ones, Vaishnavas are the ones whose, the prominent object of worship is Krishna, and to render service to him. That is our prominent and primary characteristic. So there are obviously different categories of devotees, you know, Kanishtha, Madhyama, Uttama. And the process is that, you know, one, the Kanishtha will acquire knowledge from the Guru or advanced devotee, and then he also comes to the platform Madhyama and Uttama. So the Uttama is the most perfect devotee, Madhyama is the middle category of devotee, and Kanishtha is the lower category. But in general, any devotee who would like to surrender to Krishna, is that then the primary characteristics of any devotee, he is actually a devotee. Right? See, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met the devotees, so in three different occasions, in three different years, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked by the same devotees that Mahaprabhu, who is a devotee of the Lord? So first, anyone remembers what Mahaprabhu answered? Anyone remembers? Ujjwala Mathuri, Subraman Mathuri, the CC class students.
Prabhu, question again, Prabhu. Sorry, Prabhu. Between can disconnected.
Yeah, so when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met devotees and he was asked by the devotees that who is a devotee, and these are the same devotees who asked him three times in three different years that who is actually a devotee. So what did Mahaprabhu say?
Initially, first time he says that whoever chants Hare Krishna Mahamantra, he is a devotee. And second time he says, by seeing, by seeing whom, others will feel to chant and become devotees.
Right. So Uttama and Kanishtha. And Madhyama, he said, that whoever constantly chants the name and teaches others to chant the name. Right? So that is Madhyama, because Madhyama discriminates and he teaches. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, see, now you can wonder with this particular answer of Mahaprabhu, you know, because, see, he did not chastise the devotees. He said, why are you asking the same question again and again? So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually, you know, so we can understand that this was his leela, where he wanted to explain who are the different categories of devotees. So he allowed them to ask this, you know, repeatedly three times in upcoming 3 years, right? First, second, third year, like that. He answered all these questions. He did not say that why are you asking the same question? I already answered it. So he gave three different definitions of a devotee. So obviously the meaning is that he gave the definition of a Kanishtha, Madhyama, and Uttama, right? So whoever surrenders to the Lord. So that's a basic definition. Now, surrender begins with the state of Shraddha. It does not have to be Prema. It does not have to be Nishtha or Asakti or Ruchi. Right? Surrender, the very beginning process of, so the nine stages are divided into three parts. What are the three parts? NOD class students. Aritra. Aritra, are you there? Okay. Ujjwala Mataji, Sudhamal Mataji. Yeah. What are the three stages of devotion?
Sadhana Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti, and Prema Bhakti.
Yeah. Right. So see, pure devotional service is divided into three stages. So it is still pure, right from Shraddha also, even if you are contaminated, you have so many other desires, material desires, but still Shraddha to Prema have one common characteristic, that is the willingness to surrender to the Supreme Lord. So obviously the surrender level will be intensified as we go ahead with the stages, but the common thing is that a devotee at the stage of Shraddha also wants to surrender to the Lord, and for him also the Lord is the main priority.
The person you are speaking,
right? So is this clear? So whether it is Shraddha or Prema, you know, any devotee who would like to surrender. Now, one thing can be said, you know, because here Krishna says, Mad Bhakta, only my devotees can understand this thoroughly. So now, do you think that a Kanishtha can understand this thoroughly? So thoroughly basically can mean with deep faith and deep understanding and deep conviction. Okay. So basically it, you know, this can mean that even if a Kanishtha will try to understand the subject matter, but he will advance with time. You know, his understanding will become, it will start developing as and when he progresses in spiritual life. So so thoroughly is, you know, it's very important word. And generally the most perfect devotee can actually thoroughly understand, you know, what Krishna is basically meaning here, because there are so many hidden meanings. You know, whatever Krishna is saying has multiple meanings also. And we also can understand that from hearing the commentaries of other acharyas, because the acharyas also, they provide some insights which we are not aware and which probably we don't even think while going through the subject matter. So the acharyas are the ones who are actually giving insights, and they are giving from a perfect knowledge, right? Because they are perfected beings. So we can understand that thoroughly can actually mean the most advanced Vaishnava, the Uttama, perfected being. So the process is a practice for the sadhakas. You know, the understanding will become more thorough as we practice more and more like that. Okay? So any comment or question?
Clear, Prabhuji.
Yeah, and certain things, you know, see, it is all... Like, one more thing is that, you know, certain things are difficult to understand because, you know, those who are inclined for the liberation process, they will not be able to understand many things. Because, you know, when we try to preach to others, they are not in the capacity of understanding certain basic principles. Or we also know that even amongst devotees also, not everyone is able to understand all the topics. You know, so according to their limitation capacities, they understand certain things. So, at the end, that's why Prabhupada said, you know, he is quoting Bhagavad Gita, and that only by devotional service, actually, one can understand me. So, so it is natural that, and then Krishna also says that, Bhavanam Janmanamante Gyanvan Mam Prabhante Vasudevam Sarvamiti Sam Atma Sudurlab. That, you know, amongst thousands of men, one will try to achieve perfection. So he goes on, you know, out of those thousand, one will actually achieve perfection. And amongst those thousands, one will actually know me in truth. So it is like that. Right? Okay, next. Yeah, Angel Mataji.
प्रकृतिं पुरुषं चैव विधि अनादि भवः विक्रमश्च गुणैश्च विधि प्रकृति संभवान् मटीरियल नेचर एंड लिविंग एंटिटी शुड बी अंडरस्टूड टू बी बिगिनिंगलेस देयर ट्रांसफॉर्मेशन एंड द मोड ऑफ नेचर आर प्रोडक्ट ऑफ मटीरियल नेचर एफर्ट. By the knowledge given in this chapter, one can understand the body, the field of activity, and the knowers of the body, both the individual soul and the super soul. The body is the field of activity and is composed of material nature. The individual soul that is embodied and enjoying the activities of the body is the Purusha, or the living entity. He is one knower and the other is the super soul. Of course, it is to be understood that both the super soul and the individual entity are different manifestations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The living entity is the is in the category of his energy, and the super soul is in the category of his personal expansion. Both material nature and the living entity are eternal. That is to say that they existed before the creation. The material manifestation is from the energy of the Supreme Lord, and so also are the living entities. But the living entities are of superior energy. Both the living entities and the material nature existed before this was manifested. Material nature was absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu, and when it was required, it was manifested by the agency of the Mahatattva. Similarly, the living entities are also in him because they are conditioned, they are averse to serving the Supreme Lord. Thus, they are not allowed to enter into the spiritual sky. But with the coming forth of material nature, these living entities are again given a chance to act in the material world and prepare themselves to enter into the spiritual world. That is the mystery of this material creation. Although the living entity is originally the spiritual part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, but due to his rebellious nature, he is conditioned within material nature. It really does not matter how these living entities or superior entities of the Supreme Lord have come in contact with the material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead knows, however, how and why this actually took place. In the scriptures, the Lord says that those attracted by this material nature are undergoing a hard struggle for existence. But we should know it with certainty from the descriptions of these few verses that all transformations and influence of material nature by the three modes are also productions of material nature. All transformations and variety in respect to living entities are due to the body. As far as spirit is concerned, living entities are all the same.
Okay. The first question is, material nature and living entity are eternal. But we have heard that material nature, material creation is coming afterwards. So, what is this material nature? How is material nature eternal? Is this the material creation which is referred here? Material nature, or you know, the creator, because creation, you see, it is created and it is annihilated. So is that eternal? And here, interestingly, Prabhupada is saying, that is to say that they existed before the creation. So material nature and living entity, they existed before the creation. So we always thought that material nature means the creation, right? Means the material world, material universe. So what is this material nature here?
Actually, material nature is also external, but it appears manifest and unmanifest.
Okay, so we're talking about the creation. Talking about the creation. You're talking about creation, actually. So, but here, Prabhupada is actually really distinguishing between creation, material nature, and living entity. Because he says that they existed before the creation.
I mean, if I am right, actually we are part and parcel of Krishna. For our enjoyment, he has created this material nature. Everything, all this material creation, manifestations, everything. Before that, only living entity is existing.
Yeah, that we understand, that living entity is existing. But it's talking about the material nature. What is that material nature? Any guess? Raji bro?
Yes, sir.
What is the material nature? Actually, Prabhupada gives some hint. You know, if you have seen clearly, Prabhupada does mention a few points. So first hint is that material nature was absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu. And when it was required, it was manifested by the agency of the Mahatattva. This is a very clear hint. Okay. So this material nature is called Prakriti. And it is also called as Pradana. So this Pradana... See, what is Mahatattva? Mahatattva is when Pradana is influenced by time and the glance of Supreme Personality of Godhead, then the Pradana is manifested in the 24 form material elements through the Mahatattva, agency of the Mahatattva. So Mahatattva is actually the manifested form of the material nature or Pradana. So Pradana is actually an unmanifested form. So this Pradana is eternal actually. It is always with the Lord. It is always absorbed in the Lord. And when the Lord is glancing, then that Pradana will get transformed into Mahatattva. And so, you know, we get the 24 elements from the Mahatattva. So is this clear? Yeah, so this Pradana or Prakriti is unmanifested form of that material nature, which is lying in the seed form, you can say like that, you know, it's lying, you know, like a seed form in the body of the Lord. And when the Lord desires to create the material universe, he will glance inside this Pradana. And by the influence of time, it's converted into Mahatattva. Okay. Any question? So now second point, you know, Prabhupada also mentions it really does not matter how these living entities or superior entities of Supreme Lord have come into contact with material nature. So Prabhupada answers that here. I mean, you know, the problem is that even Prabhupada also did not answer this. He obviously, you know, he was giving answers to his question whenever he was asked. And, you know, he gave answers like, when we are in contact with Krishna, then we are, you know, liberated. But when we come in contact with Maya, we become conditioned. You know, so he gave various examples, you know, how the clouds can cover the sun. The cloud is actually, you know, covering the sun. And we think that the sun has gone. Sun is not there. But actually the sun is there. So similarly, you know, how we become conditioned, you know, that is how Prabhupada actually gave this analogy to explain. But how do we come, you know, in where we are coming from spiritual world or from Brahman, that is something that still debatable. And, you know, no one knows the answer to this question. So, you know, finally, Prabhupada also said, does not really matter how living entities have come in contact with material nature. And Prabhupada used to say that, you know, we have to be concerned about how to get out from this world because it's a place of misery and suffering. And then after that, you know, when we go to spiritual world, then the Lord will give you the answer for this. So here Prabhupada also mentions, the Supreme Personality of Godhead knows, however, how and why this actually took place. Right? So, yeah, I mean, you know, we have to just wait for that time. And I think when we go there, probably we'll forget to ask him this question. Or we'll realize that we have never fallen down to the material world. Because time switched back, you know. So there is no time in the spiritual world. So we'll always feel that we just saw a dream. It never happened to us, really. all the suffering and pain that we had undergone in the material world. So it's possible that we might forget about that, we might think it as a dream, and maybe the Lord will probably make us forget. But that is not fair. You know, I would definitely want Him to answer these questions. So, you know, I would make sure that I would remember. But the problem is, you know, Sarvasya Sam Vidhi Sannivishtam Matad Smriti Jnanam Aponam Cha Vedesya Sarva Rama Vedya Vedanta Krit Vedya Vid Eva Chaham. The problem is that He is the remembrance and He is the forgetfulness in a living entity. From Him comes knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. So I generally, you know, if you have a desire, then I will fulfill the desire. But definitely would like to know. And I hope that I can come down and I can share with all of you. Not all of you, but maybe for, you know, for future devotees, that why, you know, how we have fallen down from the spiritual world or from Brahman. You know, at least if I get that information, very useful. But very doubtful, because, you know, when great acharyas like Prabhupada and previous acharyas, they also, you know, like they answer it, you know, they answer it. But it's like, you know, it's not 100% like convincing. Or probably we are not able to understand, you know, that's a simple thing to say. because we are unable to understand certain things. So, you know, certain answers are unquestioned, I mean, questions are unanswered. Okay. Any comments on this?
Clear, Prabhuji.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in short, Prabhupada says that, you know, because of their rebellious nature, you know, they got conditioned with the material nature. You know. So Prabhupada said both things, you know, he said one can never fall from spiritual world. At the same time, he also said that we are coming from the spiritual world. So, okay. Yes. Next verse. 21st verse. Karya karana kartitve hetu prakritir uchate purusha sukha kanam bhoktitve hetu uchate. Nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects. That is, the living entity is the cause of various suffering and enjoyments in this world. The different manifestations of body and senses among the living entities are due to material nature. There are 8.4 million species of life, and these varieties are creations of the material nature. They arise from the different sensual pleasures of the living entity, who thus desire to live in this body or that. When he is put into different bodies, he enjoys different kinds of happiness and distress. His material happiness and distress are due to his body, not to himself, as he is. In his original state, there is no doubt of enjoyment. Therefore, that is his real state. Because of the desire to lord it over material nature, he is in the material world. In the spiritual world, there is no such thing. The spiritual world is pure, but in the material world, everyone is struggling hard to acquire different kind of pleasures for the body. It might be more clear to state that this body is the effect of the senses. The senses are instruments for gratifying desire. Now, the sum total, body and instrument senses, is offered by material nature, and as will be clear in the next verse, the living entity is blessed or damned with circumstances according to his past desire and activity. According to one's desire and activities, material nature places one in various residential quarters. The being himself is the cause of his attaining such residential quarters and his attainment, enjoyment or suffering. Once placed in some particular kind of body, he comes under the control of nature, because the body, being matter, acts according to the laws of nature. At that time, the living entity has no power to change that law. Suppose an entity is put in the body of a dog. As soon as he is put in the body of a dog, he must act like a dog. He cannot act otherwise. If a living entity is put in the body of a hog, then he is forced to eat stool and act like a hog. Similarly, if the living entity is put in the body of demigod, he must act according to his body. This is the law of nature. But in all circumstances, the super soul is with the individual soul. That is explained in the Vedas, Mundaka Upanishad 3.11, as follows. Ya Suparna Sayuja Sakaya. The Supreme Lord is so kind upon the living entity that he always accompanies the individual soul and in all circumstances is present as the super soul or Paramatma. Okay, one question I wanted to ask. We know that the gross body has hands, legs, eyes and everything. What about the subtle body? The subtle body also has? I think this is, you know, question for everyone. Everyone can answer based on their realization and understanding. What do you think? The subtle body also has hands, eyes, legs, the sense organs. And second question, who is feeling the pain? Is the body feeling the pain or the soul feeling the pain? Or who is feeling happiness? Amazing question, right? Never thought about. I don't know why devotees are taking so much time to answer this question. At least the second question is quite simple. I mean,
the
I think everyone can... Huh?
Body feels the pain.
Body is experiencing. Okay, then what about dead body? The dead body does not experience anything. And what about the first question's answer? So what is, no one can guess also the answer to the first question. Okay, let me try to give a hint. Okay, now what happens when the body dies? We know that according to karma, you know, we go to hell, we go to Yamaraj for punishment, or we go to different planetary systems. So then let's say that before getting a particular type of body or gross body, we are sent to Yamloka. So in Yamloka, do we have the senses or not? Because we have the subtle body.
There you will be given a form for to experience that pain. Like there's something I heard, like it, we call it as Vairupa, something from Garuda Purana I heard. I'm not sure about it.
Okay, but even if we are in the gross body, so does the subtle body have these other different sense organs?
Subtle body will not have material senses. No,
it will not have gross senses. Okay, that is acceptable. What about if I say it will have subtle senses?
Not sure, Prabhuji. Don't want to guess. I want to hear.
Okay, Raju Prabhuji.
Okay.
Huh? Prabhuji is in enjoying mode. Yeah, Prabhuji is coming from Mahabaleshwar. So,
it will have senses because how will it experience the punishment otherwise. Some senses will have to be there, no?
Yeah, that is logical.
The person you are speaking with.
Yeah, so that's logical, right? So, yeah, the subtle body has subtle senses. And the gross body senses are actually the expansion of this, you know, subtle senses. Or you can say that, you know, because things are going from, you know, matter to subtle and subtle to spiritual. Like, you know, that is the procedure, how it actually, whatever happens, you know, the feedback is given to the soul, ultimately. So this feedback given to the soul happens through the contact with the material body, gross body, and then it is that input is given to the subtle body. The subtle body is obviously carrying the impressions also. So, yeah, it does have subtle senses, you know, like the eyes and... So this gross body is just the manifestation of the subtle senses in the gross way. Okay, so these senses are there, and then, you know, one can interact with those senses, then they will go to the, you know, Yamloka. Or you know, we have a ghostly body also. So, the only difference is that if you don't have a gross body, you cannot actually satisfy your desires. You cannot, because, see, you cannot be in touch with subtle nature with a gross body. Okay, so subtle, if you want to experience subtle things, you have to be in touch with subtle things. And if you want to experience gross things, then you have to experience with a gross body. You cannot experience that with a subtle body. So you require, you know, a gross body also. Okay, so does this make sense? Haribol.
And the second question, Prabhu?
Yeah, so second. What about the second? Rajiv Prabhu is the greatest logician in our class. And, you know, Ujjala Mataji is the greatest scholar. So, what about the second answer? Aritra, are you there? Is he there?
I just came back. I just came back. Yeah.
Acha, you just came. So did you hear?
I didn't hear the questions. So.
The two very interesting questions. If you answer these two questions, these are like kind of basic questions. Okay, but if you answer these questions, you will be awarded Nobel Prize.
Okay.
But the first question is. First question is that. Does the subtle body have senses? Because we know the gross body has senses. And second thing is, I don't know if you have heard the answer already because you have joined.
Okay. What so is second question? Second question.
Second question is, who is experiencing feeling? You know, feeling and experiencing happiness, distress, the body or the soul? Whether it is the gross body, the subtle body, or the soul.
Okay. So for this, I don't know. The first question that you're asking about if the subtle body has
senses, like, you know, eyes, nose, so, you know, all these sense organs.
Okay. So the subtle body, if I'm not wrong, consists of mind, intelligence, and false ego. Is that correct or no?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is right.
But mind is the master of senses. Like, my mind is the one that is guiding the senses or is holding the reins to the senses. So when it is, the senses are something that's like, that is in the body. Like, for example, hearing. We have ears, so we hear. But then in the subtle body, there is no ear or there is no skin. So we are not really going to be able to experience anything in the subtle body. Or we may have the feeling of thirst, but since we don't have a body, we cannot really enjoy or relish water. So that way, yes, the subtle body does not have senses. That's my answer. It may be wrong, but I'll still try to answer because I've heard something about, you know, how ghosts feel, why ghosts suffer. So based on that, I'm trying to answer.
I just discussed that, you know, about ghosts also, because someone can put this question that ghosts, they are unable to satisfy their desire. And so they obviously require a gross body, you know, because they don't have a body to fulfill their desire. So, okay, but what about the second question, sir?
The second question was, who's experiencing pleasure or who's experiencing anything?
Is that the soul or the body?
So for that, okay, maybe it will be a little roundabout. I cannot talk straight, but I'll try still. So if we take a cut that's made to the body, so that the skin is the, it perceives touch, right? If we don't have the mind, we don't really, we can't really tell. So mind is like the interface between the soul and the senses. Is that right? Like, the consciousness is there because of the soul. The consciousness is because of the soul. But the mind is connected to the outside, connects the senses to the soul. I don't know how to explain it. So straightforward.
So ultimately, who is the recipient?
The recipient is not the body. Is not the body, but the soul.
Yeah, obviously, you know.
Right, through the mind.
Yeah, it's
the
right.
Soul, but it's through the mind, yeah.
so that's the right answer. But now the question is that we say that the soul is pure and the soul can never experience, anything. I mean, you know, the pleasure, and it's not material, it is pure, it is spiritual. So how does it experience that pleasure and pain?
The problem is that only, Prabhu, we consider when we enter this material nature and take a body, we are conditioned. We feel that we are this body. That's why we are feeling. Otherwise, there is no suffering for the soul. Because we are conditioned, we feel that we are this body.
We identify ourselves. And as Aritra was explaining, that was a very nice explanation that through the mind, because the perceived, if you are going to have a cut in one of your limbs of the body, then as we know that, you know, once the body is dead, you do whatever with the body. It's not going to experience anything. So body is obviously, it's a gross material element. How can it experience anything, right? But the pain that is someone is experiencing, that is obviously the soul, because the soul is connected to the subtle and the gross body. So it is a, you know, channel, the subtle body is a channel why, you know, how the pain and pleasure is actually transmitted to the soul, because the soul is identifying with the body. Okay, so that's how the soul is the recipient, basically. That's how the soul is experiencing. Okay, now if the soul becomes liberated, then there is no question of pleasure and pain in the material world, because the soul gets a spiritual body. Right? So, does this answer your question? Angel Mataji, does this make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. And coming to the first question, you know, so the subtle body also has subtle senses. Because the gross body is just a manifestation of that subtle body. And even if you think, the impressions are there in the subtle body. It is not in the gross body. Because the gross body is just a current body. The impressions are actually stored in false ego mind intelligence that we know. But at the same time, you know, why the body is acting like, you know, in a certain way, that impression is coming from the senses directing the gross body. the subtle senses. So now the question about the ghost, why a ghost, you know, is having a subtle body, but, you know, because the ghost is craving for a gross body. And the answer is that, you know, I was explaining that the gross things can only be perceived by gross things. Okay, so we require gross body. So subtle things cannot actually contact gross elements. Okay, so that's why the ghost will require a gross body also.
Gross body, yeah.
So subtle body is basically, you know, the subtle senses is subtle. See, what is subtle? Something that you cannot actually see, you cannot perceive with your vision. That is subtle. And so, to say that the subtle body does not have senses, that is also true in one sense. You know, because you cannot see, you cannot perceive that. But at the same time, you know, the gross body, you know, the different parts of the body, they are all manifestations of actually the subtle body. So, and then, you know, we're discussing about, you know, when the subtle body is transformed, the subtle body, when he visits Yamloka, then what happens? You know, the subtle body should have a form to receive the punishment, right? So it has subtle senses, but it also acquires a temporary, you know, form, a temporary gross form, you know. And so you know, the soul can actually experience suffering. Okay, so yeah, I mean, you know, these are very technical. I mean, you know, we never thought about that, but very important questions. Okay, so this is just, you know, like pertaining to the, you know, statement Prabhupada is making here, that it might be more clear to state that this body is the effect of the senses. Yeah, because ultimately, you know, it's all coming from the senses. The body is actually not doing anything. It's dead. It's a dead matter. So the body is not doing anything. It's because of the soul, the consciousness is pervading. That's why the body is active. That's why we are thinking, feeling, willing. And, you know, mind, intelligence, ego. That is the main thing, you know, the subtle body. Without subtle body, there is no question of, you know, the gross body also. Now, you know, the answer that, you know, Prabhupada gave, that the living entity is actually superior to the material energy or the Prakriti, which is the infinite energy of the Lord. But because, you know, but it also, you know, they explained that the superior energy can be influenced by the lower energy also. And they start identifying with that. So that's how the Prakriti, material energy, Maya, can actually influence the Jiva also. That is how they explain it. So now, you know, why we are superior energy? Because we are kind of Ishwaras to one sense. You know, we are Purushas. Prabhupada mentioned that, you know, the Jiva is actually the Purusha, right? So who is actually Purusha? Purusha is ultimately actually Krishna. But we are also called as Purusha because we can manipulate and we can enjoy the material world. The material world can actually put us into illusion. It can influence us. But who is enjoying the material world? Who is controlling to some extent? That's the Jiva. So that's why we are superior energy of the Lord. But at the same time, because of our quantitative, you know, difference from the Supreme Lord, we get illusioned. Is this clear? Any question on this? I mean, you know, the sun and the cloud is the example that, you know, Acharyas give, how the cloud can actually cover the sun. So similarly, the material energy can also cover the Jiva. But, you know, Prabhupada does mention this, you know, in the Parpat, that ultimately, you know, the effect is only because of one's karma, because of one's desires. So, you know, because of that, we get influenced. And, you know, this is very interesting that, you know, we have discussed this earlier, but to bring this point again, that actually speaking, free will does not exist for conditioned souls, technically speaking. And then, you know, then we have had discussed that how free will is actually, it can be utilized by those who are in the mode of goodness. So they have, like, you know, maximum chances of utilizing their free will in a very effective way, or to say that they can attain liberation or go back to Godhead. That's how, see, when you talk about making choices, the only thing that is important is basically going back to Godhead or getting liberated. Okay, why? Because even if you are in the mode of material goodness, but still if you make certain choices in the mode of goodness, you still have to come back to the material world. So in one sense, even you have free will to make choices in the mode of goodness. You decide certain things. You make choices based on the mode of goodness. But then again, the problem is that the mode of goodness will again resuscitate with us, and it will entangle us in the material world. So then where is the free will? We want to, see, by using the free will, we want to escape from the suffering. But here, by using the mode of goodness, we are still getting entangled. So technically speaking, even those who are mode of goodness, they don't have free will unless and until they strive for going back to Godhead. Okay, so they have more chance. And then those who are in the mode of passion, they have a lesser chance of using their free will. And those who are ignorant, so, you know, technically speaking, they have almost zero chance of using their free will. Now, you know, it's a different thing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy has come, and through the devotee's mercy, you know, one can get bhakti also, whichever mode they might be. Or let's say, for example, the plants, the animals, you know, all other beasts, reptiles, birds and all. So they are also given Harinam, and they are also, you know, they also come in contact with the spiritual atmosphere, the sound vibration. So obviously that will benefit them, there's no doubt about it. So that way, you know, they can also get free from the cycle. But again, you know, the thing is, it might reduce their karma, but, you know, they again have to take the human form of life. They will get bhakti, and they will have to start bhakti, and then, you know, so it's a, yeah, so free will, you know, or free choice is like, technically, you know, it's not there for materialistic people or non-devotees, even though they might be in mode of goodness, passion or ignorance, unless and until they start to think of coming out of that. Okay? So does this make sense? Any question on this? That's why, you know, we are, yeah, living empty is the cause of your suffering and enjoyment. When did you join?
15-20 minutes ago.
Oh, okay. But anyways, you know, thank you for still joining. You know,
it's my privilege to get it, you know. Prabhuji, I'll give you one question.
Yeah.
In the last statement that you have, like in the mode of goodness, depending upon the way the jiva makes choices, that choices may pull them down back to the material pool, or it can help them to elevate to the spiritual one. So how can we distinguish it about those two choices?
Yeah, so they should have some sukriti. You know, and so sukriti is connected to bhakti, and bhakti is, as we know, that bhakti comes from the devotee's mercy first. So devotees, because they give mercy, then the bhakti will come. So now, you know, whether with jiva, when, and, you know, where they will attain bhakti, how they will attain bhakti, that is something beyond our minds and senses to perceive, because bhakti is independent, like just like the Supreme Lord. In the Shastra, it is mentioned that fortunate is that person whom the Lord himself chooses for his devotional service. So basically what it is saying that actually it is the lawyer who is actually choosing someone, you know, and he is probably dancing at someone. So he is destroying his bhakti. But his glance, obviously from Shastra we also understand that before his glance, the devotee's mercy first comes, and then because of the devotee's mercy, the Lord's glance will follow. So it is the Lord who is choosing again, you know, like, and because bhakti is actually the internal energy of the Lord. Bhakti Devi, right? So it is not different from the Lord and it is independent. So now how and when, where bhakti will manifest, that is completely inconceivable. So that is just, you know, random. I mean, it all depends on the devotee's mercy, finally. So where they want to discriminate, where they want to give bhakti, there, you know, that place they will give bhakti. So it is the exclusive right of the Madhyam Adhikaris, according to the Vishwanatha Chakra Thakur. Okay, so Sukriti, they should have Sukriti. But see, there are a lot of people in the mode of goodness, but they are probably Jnanis. You know, because mode of goodness, you can attain Jnana, and you can also aspire for the impersonal liberation. You can become a Mayavadi also. You can also become a materialistic in the mode of goodness. So you can do a lot of past activities, karma kanda. But a devotee in the, you know, just by the mercy of devotees, one can get the Sukriti and one can, you know, attain devotional service to the Lord. So that will save one from entanglement. That will actually create one's free will then. You know, so that's how actually, you know, the free will is there. Otherwise, there's no, technically speaking, okay, you know, it might, we may say that we have a free will. We may, you know, we have the choice to respond to situation, you know, in brief, that, you know, we have all, every living entity, they have the choice to react, respond to such situations. Now, destiny is also there, definitely. But how they react to that particular situation, that is their free will. Now, even if you have a free will to react in a different way, you know, in the mode of goodness, but still the problem is you get entangled again. So then, you know, what is the use of your free will or your free choice? And in the next lifetime, you can still fall back to passion and ignorance. So then there is no question of saving oneself. So the free will is useless, to say, right? So does this make sense?
So probably, and then the next question that comes in my mind.
Okay, probably my phone might get disconnected, so I will join back. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So, shall we continue?
Yeah, my phone might get disconnected. I will join back again, you know, in case, you know, if I...
Okay, so...
You can continue, Prabhu. You can continue.
The question,
yeah.
The question comes out over here that, yeah, the Sukriti is necessary, and in at least even the one devotee's mercy or some sort of his security to please Krishna, to impart us or bestow us with the bhakti, is the task for, in the mode of goodness for a jiva to go back to Godhead, right? But in that context, that is absolutely on the choice of jiva, Mr. Rao, Krishna and the devotee himself. And there is nothing related to the jiva's free will, right? Even if, let's say, I have free will to go back to Godhead, but if I do not have Sukriti, or I cannot get even the mercy of any devotee, because it is random, as you mentioned, then what is the point of my choice, free will?
Yeah, so, see, that's why I said that bhakti, when it is given by devotees, they don't discriminate. They will not say that someone is in passion, or someone is in goodness, let me give to... Obviously, that is their preference, because they will see the receptivity. Now, someone in the mode of passion might be more distressed, and those who are more distressed, they might take to spiritual life easily, right? So they may first see who is more recipient towards bhakti. That is their priority. They don't see the mode of goodness, ignorance, and passion. Because in godly life, if you see, Jagai Mother were brahmanas, but, you know, they were acting like Sudras, less than Sudras, most fallen sinful demons, right? But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, you know, he gave the mercy to them. So he did not say that, well, you know, these people are like, you know, less than mode of ignorance, so let me just eliminate. No, he wanted to give to everyone. And he was, you know, thinking that whoever is a, you know, whoever would like to, you know, they have a recipient heart who is able to take that mercy, so they would give to that person. So devotees, they give mercy to any jiva, you know, without thinking what mode of. See, first of all, it's a different thing that the, you know, Madhyam Adhikari is also influenced to a certain extent, you know. So he's not completely liberated. So he's, you know, passion and ignorance destroyed to a certain extent, but he's not completely liberated. So obviously a devotee will first of all think that, well, you know, I'm myself struggling with my senses. How can I discriminate that, oh, he's, this person is in ignorance, he's in passion. So we don't discriminate like that. We just give mercy depending on the receptivity of the person. Okay. Now, at that particular point of time, the person has become receptive. That is something which is only the Lord knows. You know, how he became receptive at that point of time, that, you know, we don't know. Because talking about the first point of contact, you know, the first point of Sukriti is coming from the mercy of devotees. So, you know, if you meet someone, maybe some person, you know, they are, you know, they carry forward from previous life. So it is possible, you know, their bhakti is already there, but, you know, they, in the next life they meet devotees and, you know, they accept the path full-heartedly. You know, in the previous life probably they might not be able to do it. So in the previous life, you know, some devotee might have bestowed that mercy, but it's just that, you know, they are unable to practice that. So maybe in the next life or you know, maybe they did certain sukritis and then, you know, Krishna arranged for them in the next life to meet devotees and accept it wholeheartedly, to follow it. But the starting point is, you know, the devotee's mercy is the starting point, and how a jiva attains that, that is completely inconceivable. Like, you know, it's you cannot say it, because karma is not the deciding factor of any jiva attaining bhakti. Karma does not decide. Pious, impious activities does not decide anything. The thing that decides is the Sukriti. Now a person, let's say for example, a devotee opens a temple and does not know the person also, but that person goes and visits the temple. So just by visiting the temple, his Sukriti has started. Okay. Now while he visited the temple, that we don't know. That, you know, that is, I think, you know, according to his desire, you know, or according to his choices, you know. So so, you know, it is like that basically. So how a person will come in touch with devotee, when he will come, that is completely out of beyond our perception.
Okay.
So yeah. Because, you know, Krishna clearly says in the Bhagavad Gita that karma does not have any influence. Sinful people also take bhakti. There are so many examples in shastras, right? By the mercy of devotees, sinful people also take bhakti. So we cannot say that, well, yeah, someone is a mode of goodness, so he will, that's why he will visit the temple, you know, because he's quite favorable. Not necessary. Mode of passion people are more distressed compared to mode of goodness people. And mode of goodness seekers are generally, you know, liberation seekers. The passionate people, they might be more inclined to know about God. So it is, you know, I mean, we can also see ourselves, you know, like we were definitely not in the mode of goodness when we joined ISKCON. But, you know, we had certain experiences, distress or inquisitiveness, you know, and then we had searched. So then we read Bhagavad Gita or we came in contact with devotees and, you know, so like that. Okay. yeah. So any other comment or question? Okay, so we can end here. Anyways, you know, I wanted to appreciate, you know, Raji Prabhu and Angel Matari, in spite of traveling, you know, they made it a point to attend. And obviously, the spirit of Mithul Prabhu and Matari also, because even for less time also, they have joined the class. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Vivek.
Thank you. Thank you, Prabhuji. It was our privilege to enjoy this. Really enjoy that.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. Thank you all.
Okay, so thank you all the devotees for joining. Hare Krishna, Ramapuram.